It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is The Two Matts for the week ending Friday the 4th of August. A podcast presented by Two Wise Trees.
Yes.
That will sort of make sense. What did we talk about this episode, Matt?
Well, we talked about possible title, Don and Barbie. We talked about the indictment against Donald Trump. But more to the point, we talked about how Donald Trump has kind of changed the boundaries of the conceivable and how that's really altered the way that we think about democracy.
Yeah, and we also gave a good run through review of Barbie the film.
We did, which I think it's safe to say we both enjoyed. And
then we argued about David Baddiel.
And then we had a bit of a domestic about David Baddiel.
And Oppenheimer. Okay. David Baddiel wasn't complaining about Barbie. He was complaining about Oppenheimer.
So far. Yes. So far.
All right, well, there we go. Plenty worth listening to, I hope you will agree. And this is The Two Matts, Episode 7, Don and Barbie.
Enjoy.
So, Matt, what are we going to talk about this week?
Hard to avoid Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Third indictment in 4 months. And this is obviously the big one.
Yeah.
We're recording this on Thursday, so today...
Well, in about 2 hours he's in court.
Actually, a bit later, I think.
It's 4 o'clock. It's 4 o'clock their time. Yeah, of course.
He'll be...
Is that how time zones work?
It is. I'll show you a picture of the globe later on and how it works.
Wonderful.
And he'll be arraigned and will presumably enter four pleas of not guilty. And then we have this amazing prospect that he may well either be convicted and stay out of jail, or acquitted and stay out of jail, or be convicted and go to jail. All of which is amazing.
And what's the timescale for the actual trial
then? Well, Jack Smith, who's the rather impressive and scary special counsel who's written this indictment, and it's only 45 pages long. And if I would heartily commend it to listeners or viewers on YouTube, because it's a really beautiful piece of concise prose. It's not legalese at all. It's easy to get on the internet. And it just reminds you of what went on between the election day of November the 3rd, 2020, and the inauguration of Joe Biden on January the 20th, 2021. And what it is basically he's gone for conspiracy. There are four charges: conspiracy to defraud the US, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, third, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, and four, an interesting civil rights charge, conspiracy against rights to vote.
Yeah.
He hasn't gone for sedition and insurrection, which he could have, but it's quite hard to prove. And he then lists in very cool but very clear language all of the instances where Trump either tried to manipulate the electoral process after the election, pressurizing people, and crucially ignoring clear opinion from two attorney generals, intelligence officials, cybersecurity officials, state officials. You've lost, mate. Yeah. And then it leads up, of course, to the dreadful day of January the 6th. And whilst Jack Smith, the counsel, is not accusing him of treason or sedition or anything like that, the undertow of it all is that this was a conspiracy involving Trump and six unnamed co-conspirators.
Although they've kind of they've worked out who five of them are.
They're mostly identifiable. Yeah. Giuliani yeah. and Sidney Powell, who was yeah. very important in the kind of Fox spreading of the Trump lie, and a couple of other characters. John Eastman, who is a constitutional historian, who was sort of dragged into allege that there was a case for not validating the election, yeah. totally bogus. But there are some, you know, very compelling details, like Trump saying to Mike Pence,
"This is extraordinary.
God help us!" emerges as part of the hero, yeah. one of the heroes of this story. You know, "You're too honest."
That's right.
You know, amazing. And a guy called Jeffrey Clark, who was a not very distinguished Justice Department lawyer, whom Trump wanted to elevate to Attorney General, being warned, look, you know, this might lead, if we could carry on with this, this might lead to riots in the streets, in cities. And Clark says, what do you think the Insurrection Act is for? I.e., you know, we'll mobilise the police and, if necessary, the army yeah. to put down protests.
Yeah, the Pence thing, I thought, I mean, that's...
Pence is extraordinary, isn't
and,
it?
I mean, what was extraordinary, and you feel sorry for Pence because he clearly realises that he
not
is
a sentence in, we thought we'd be saying.
He's in the middle of a shitstorm
yeah.
and in a very difficult place, and he is keeping notes like nobody's business.
Which was a revelation.
Yeah, he is making notations of every conversation. And the extraordinary one is he phones Trump on Christmas Day to say, "Merry Christmas, boss." And within two sentences, Trump's yeah. saying, "Don't let these electoral votes count," you know.
Yes.
And Pence is saying, "But I can't do that. I don't have the authority to do that." And then 6 days later, he has another conversation where he makes this. And this was the nub of it to me. And I think, in a way, when I read this, and without wanting to cast the net too wide, Trump is the most extreme example of what I think is like an absolutely critical problem with politics, is that dishonesty is somehow factored into
yeah.
the way they operate. And where he said to Pence,
"You're
too honest."
It's an amazing moment.
It's an astonishing thing. But when you examine that sentence, "You're too honest," you could apply that to all sorts of situations and all sorts of politicians, that both sides yes. of the Atlantic, everywhere, and say that there is something factored into the way a politician works, that there's a certain level of dishonesty.
Honesty as an option.
As an option.
Rather than an obligation.
Or pragmatic dishonesty,
yes.
if you want to call it. And, you know, yeah. we were talking about Keir Starmer the other week and saying, you know, well, is he being dishonest about his approach to Brexit? Is this just a ruse?
It's now become a reflex to ask that, I think.
And I don't blame people
now
for feeling pissed off and alienated when politicians do lie to them.
This is part of the problem of all of this, is that it's notionally one politician who is yet again being now involved in his third criminal indictment. But actually, it's about the whole system, not just in America, but across the Western world, how we treat democracy and what voters expect of it and their disillusionment. And I think that what is very worrying about this is that, first of all, the chances of him being convicted are decent but not certain, because his lawyers have already made clear they're going to fight very hard on First Amendment rights.
On free speech, yeah.
Now, Smith, in his indictment, acknowledges very sensibly up front, Trump had a First Amendment right to say, even if it was false, I actually won the election.
Yeah, so just to make clear for the listeners, as I read it, and please pull me up if I'm misinterpreting this, the special counsel has said, it's not a crime to be dishonest about something like this.
Yes, it's not a crime.
Because you're covered by the First Amendment
yes.
for free speech. But it is a crime if your dishonesty is an actual central factor to the conspiracy.
Yes, and people sometimes misunderstand. The First Amendment has, as you know, an almost quasi-religious significance.
Well, it's amazing. It's worth just saying, it is how much it sits in the American psyche.
It really does.
It's astonishing.
Along with the Second Amendment for guns.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it really does. So that's a powerful element. But it's not the case that the First Amendment is absolute. And if the use of the speech that we're talking about, the actions we're talking about, leads to imminent criminality, which is where we then get to, then you're not protected by the First Amendment.
Yeah.
And Smith's point in the indictment is, yes, he had that right, but he didn't have the right to conspire against the electoral system to put all kinds of illegal pressure on people. So it's a clever way of acknowledging that. However, it is nonetheless the case that, you know, First Amendment rights do often prevail. So one has to bear that in mind. The second problem is that Trump will certainly say, well, I was just following my lawyer's advice, which also has powerful resonance in American courts and elsewhere. So that'll be the defense. The problem he's got is that he's in Washington, D.C. for this, and he has a judge who was appointed by Barack Obama, Tanya Chutkan, who's a U.S. district judge, chosen randomly. However, unfortunately for Trump, she has a lot of previous with January the 6th defendants. She's a tough, very clever, born in Jamaica, rose through the ranks, very impressive judge, and she'll take no nonsense.
And she's got form for hard sentencing, hasn't she?
Yes, and specifically on January 6th. So, and, you know, a jury in Washington, D.C., not necessarily likely to a priori be well disposed to Trump. We'll see. So it's in the balance, and it may not play out before the election next November. Who knows? And even if it does, let's say he's convicted, Trump could appeal. Big question mark as to whether he'd be allowed out on bond.
It's possible that he could be convicted before the election, put in jail, and still run for president, isn't it?
It's absolutely explicitly possible.
Yeah.
Eugene Debs was the socialist candidate in 1920 and ran for the office of the presidency. Now, he only got 3%. So
what, from inside jail?
From inside jail.
Right, wow.
Right. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution that that says you can't. So you have a prospect where, and, you know, just to be, you know, not to get too deep in the weeds, but it's possible that he could be convicted but still be allowed to be out on bond. So you'd have a presidential nominee wearing an ankle tag, you know, again, unbelievable.
Yeah.
But let's say he is behind bars or not. The interesting thing is he can run for the presidency and, as far as the Constitution is concerned, be president, but he can't vote.
Wow.
Because he's a felon.
But could he, once he was president, he could then pardon himself?
Well, there's absolutely no precedent for this.
No.
So,
but as is the case with everything,
which really is kind of the you know, the kind of headline in a way. No one really knows, and I've been reading a lot of commentary and talking to a few people, and there is absolutely no guidance in the Constitution, in the American jurisprudence, on can a president pardon him or herself. There's just no basis for that.
Because Nixon was pardoned by
Gerald Ford, his successor. I mean, you can pardon other people, but not yourself.
Yeah.
Now, more likely or equally likely is that he would try and get his attorney general to end the prosecution if it was still live, or to catch some other means of escaping it. And, you know, the Democrat charge is that Trump is running against Biden just to avoid jail, which I think is not actually right. I think it's worse than that, which is what you were just saying about the upside-down nature of all this. And I think you have to step right back. So the New European was founded by you because you understood that 2016 Brexit, we were entering a new world.
Yeah.
And how right you were. I mean, I think the post-2016 world is incomparably different to the pre-2016 world. And Trump understands it. Mm. One of the things he understands is that, and this is very dangerous, is that there is a taste now for hating institutions, for hating the legal process, for hating elites, for believing politicians when they say the whole system is rigged. And so when he, Trump, is prosecuted, instead of in the old-fashioned way, everyone running a mile, as by the way, the Republican Party did from Nixon towards the end of Watergate, actually the Republican Party, to speak not yet of the broader electorate, has hardened it around. I mean, you know, Ron DeSantis, who is a pitiful 37 points behind Trump for the nomination, and isn't going to get it, governor of Florida, has been very careful not to condemn Trump. He's towed the line on this is the Department of Justice being weaponized by the Biden administration. Vivek Maraswamy, who was supposed to be the great sort of young hope of the Republican Party, saying the same, you know, I would pardon Trump if I became president. You know, the Republican Party of Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and Eisenhower is gone now. Mm. It's a personality cult.
And is there, just pause for a second. Is there, so let's just, because obviously we're sitting here presuming that that's not the case. But is there an argument to say that Biden is seizing on this and doing everything he can to aggravate?
Well, Biden is not a saint. He's a politician. No. I don't think there's any evidence of Justice Department being abused by Biden. So I've yet to see anything that suggests that there's anything improper in the indictments. And Jack Smith's an independent special counsel. He's not a creature of the Biden
Biden.
I mean, he was appointed by Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, but there's nothing in his makeup or indeed the way he's behaved or indeed the indictment that would make you think this guy is... He's not like Rudy Giuliani, for example.
Right.
He's not just a crazed Bidenite. Quite the opposite. I mean, he's a rigorous lawyer.
Right. But your point about what Trump understands...
Yes.
...about ultimately it's the people that will decide and that the independence of the judiciary, free speech, the power of the press... And that, you know, and the place that the press plays in a modern democracy, all of those things can fall by the wayside as long as he can get enough people to say Trump's on my side and they're victimizing,
him. He's my guy. And every time they come out with a fresh set of charges, it proves how right I am to support
him. And he's so clever the way he goes about it.
I think he is. And I don't think it's intellectual. I think it's instinctive, which is more dangerous because I don't think he has to calculate it.
He sent an email to his supporters saying, he doesn't use the word prosecution, he used the word persecution.
Yes.
And he said, you know, they've come in for me, but if they get me, then their grip on you will tighten. And I will never allow them to get hold of you the way
every
got
time
hold of me. You know?
I get indicted, you're being indicted.
Exactly.
Which is a very clever message. And I think the problem with all of this is that I'm 100% behind this indictment. I think that America suffered because of Ford pardoning Nixon. There was never a moment of reckoning. However, that was way back in 1974. In 2023, in this new world, there's an expectation for people who still live in the pre-2016 world that if Trump is convicted, that's the catharsis. The movie is over.
Yeah.
Afraid not. You know, it just doesn't work that way. There was a poll in the New York Times this week, admittedly before this indictment was announced, which had Trump and Biden level pegging. Now, there is, under the rules of politics with which we were brought up, that's insanity.
Yeah.
It's pure insanity. But it's the way it's working. And he's pulling so far ahead of DeSantis and the other contenders for the Republican nomination that it's really very hard to see, whatever happens, how he's going to be denied it. So this guy that was comprehensively defeated in the 2020 election, then there was January the 6th, then his Trump's nominees in the midterms in 2022 didn't do that well, but he's still the top guy. And, you know, 3 out of 10 Americans, not Republicans, but Americans, believe that the 2020 election was stolen from him, which is a terrifying figure. And I think that what it means is that what we're staring down the barrel of a really dangerous moment for US democracy specifically and democracy generally, which is he's probably going to be almost certainly going to be the nominee. And who knows in what legal situation he'll be come November for the election day. Even if Biden beats him, is he going to accept the result? You know, we are watching a kind of reemergence of MAGA 2.0, which has all sorts of dangerous poisons in it. It's interesting. I was just now looking at what some of the, you know, the people in the right wing ecosphere are saying. And as we know, someone we've talked about before on the podcast, Tucker Carlson, has moved away from Fox and he's been replaced by this guy, Jesse Waters. And this is what Jesse Waters had to say about the indictment. This is a main cable news channel presenter. He said, "If this was political, this would be like a political war crime. This is overkill. This is political germ warfare. These are political war crimes. It's an atrocity. It's like not just dropping one atom bomb, you drop 15 dozen. Now, we know about Fox.
Yeah.
You know, we know what it did during, because of the case with Dominion voting systems, which was settled earlier this year. But this is even more extreme.
Yeah.
You know, they are stoking up
yeah.
people's fury. Now, not everyone in America watches Fox. There's a lot of independents still undecided. And I don't think there's much that Trump has done since 2020 that will impress them.
Yeah.
On the other hand, let's look at 2024. What if there's an economic slump in the States? What if, more probably, sadly, Biden's health continues to degenerate? What then?
Yeah.
And you're looking at an atmosphere that is, to say the least, febrile.
Yeah. And also, I think what it illustrates to me, you know, time and time and time again, is how little we in the UK understand America as a whole.
Yes.
We think we understand America because we go to New York or we go to California on holiday, you know, and we think about the coast.
Yes.
But when you're in the middle of America, I remember going to Arizona for a work thing. I'm getting into the back of a taxi.
Different world.
And arrogantly, maybe a bit jet lagged, but arrogantly chatting to this taxi driver, big guy who looked a bit like Joe Rogan. Maybe it was Joe Rogan. But I said to him, so how's Trump working out, right?
Yeah.
In a very limey, sarcastic way. The guy pulled the car to the side of the road, turned around and said, Donald Trump's the best thing that's ever happened to this country. Don't you forget it. And then just drove on. I'm like, okay.
Again, you have to give it to Trump. He saw this coming. Do you remember in June 2015 when he came down the golden escalator and started all this? It's 8 years ago. It's amazing. And I put my hands up. You know, at that point, I hadn't realized what was coming. And I just thought, this is going to be entertaining, offensive, and then it'll all be over. And one of the other 17 candidates, however many there were then, is going to be the Republican nominee. Not only did he win the nomination, he won the bloody election, right?
Yeah.
And at every point he's understood. So I was looking up the famous quote, January 2016, he says in Iowa, this is long before he's the nominee, long before the election, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, okay, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay. It's like incredible. Now, I remember at the time, this up the sneer factor. Everyone said, this guy is ridiculous. But actually, we've now reached that place where he's totally at odds, totally embattled by the legal system. And the more so the more he is embattled, the better he does.
Yeah.
And I think that this represents a huge challenge to the Republic, the American Republic. But it also represents a huge challenge to us because the lessons of Trump's stamina and survival are that we're all, if we kind of congregate as a kind of new European people who want to get restore internationalism and fight nationalism and a kind of evidence-based approach to policy and all those good things, common decency. If we're going to do that, we can't do it using the old tools. And I think, we've talked about this with Starmer. You mentioned the need for emotional narrative. Spot on. You know, the people that are going to beat people like Trump, and there are people like Trump in the national conservative movement in the UK, not to mention all over...
Who see him as a model.
Who see him as a model, not to mention all over the European Union.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do a different kind of politics, which is not like Trump. We don't want that kind of right-wing lying populism.
Yeah.
But it's going to have to speak to the heart as well as the head. And liberals love data. They love evidence. And, you know, what's not to like? It's good stuff. But it's just not enough in modern digital politics. So this is going to be a massive story. It's also a global story. And I mean, just it's worth mentioning as a way of winding up on this subject is that I spoke to a couple of security sources and I said, what do you think all this means for Ukraine? And they both said, Vladimir Putin is trying to run out the clock. He thinks Trump is going to win and that when he does, Putin will be able to get his way in Ukraine.
Jesus.
And that Christ. Is a, I mean, this is, look, this is speculative. We all know that.
But it's a intelligence
coming,
realistic
intelligence coming out of the
thought,
Kremlin is not of the greatest, but there's this absolute clarity that that's what Putin wants. He's in for the whole drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he can hang on in there for 18 months, he gets, because Trump will end the alliance of assistance. And once America is out of that,
then it's over.
The alliance will collapse.
Well, okay.
Big stakes.
Well, that is big time. Well, let's take a bit of a breather, come back after an advert, and let's talk about another controversial blonde American.
Yes. Klaus Barbie.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Matt, Barbie.
Don and Barbie.
Don and Barbie.
Don and Barbie.
Yeah.
So Barbie,
it's a very, little pull string.
Very beautiful outfit you've got there.
This is a persecution.
It's a persecution.
This is persecution.
I see that you were manufactured in China.
And I can touch you in that. No, we won't.
No.
We won't go there.
No, although that would be the kind of joke that would appear surprisingly in Barbie.
Have you seen the film?
I have, here's the thing is that. I did the Barbie because I'm sad and love movies.
You are the most cultural man I've ever met.
That's a very nice way of saying sad and lonely. And so on the Friday, July the 21st, it was in my diary. Oh, Barbenheimer. It was, you know.
Was it really?
Yes, it was, sadly. I went 8:10 in the morning to IMAX in Waterloo and watched Oppenheimer and then went and had a kind of lunch. But my head was still full of atom bombs and, you know, oh, God.
So wait, you saw
Oppenheimer first, right, on the huge screen.
At 8:10 in the morning.
Well, they were running hot round the clock because people want to see it in IMAX. And then after lunch, I went to see Barbie at the Everyman in King's Cross. And I didn't do it justice because my head was still full of, how do I feel? Trinity test, Hiroshima, nuclear weapons. Are they any good? Or where am I? You know, and watching all this pink postmodernism, I didn't do it justice. And everyone in the cinema was laughing and having the top time. And I thought, oh, God, but, you know, what about, you know, what if Putin starts nuclear war? Oh, God, you know, where will we hide? So I went back when we discussed doing it this week, Barbie, I thought, I'm going to go back and give another try, and I'm really glad I did because
what changed between first viewing and second?
Well, I wasn't watching it after Oppenheimer, so you know, my first, you know, top tip is don't watch it after you know, watching a nuclear test on IMAX. You know, it's not fair to Greta Gerwig or Margot Robbie as Barbie or Ryan Gosling brilliantly as Ken.
Good film, right?
Well, tell me what you think.
Well, I feel having watched it and been sort of exposed to the patriarchy thesis that runs throughout it, I feel really on dangerous ground even commentating.
Oh,
on
we
it.
Are cancelling ourselves.
Yes,
I mean, we may as even by we're like the one of the guys says a podcast hosted by two wise trees.
Yes,
that's us.
But I mean, first off, it wasn't what I was expecting
at all.
I thought it was. At first, I thought it was really courageous of Mattel, who obviously make Barbie, to be so kind of self-exposing.
Self-subversive, you
I
know.
Mean, honestly, but then as things settled and I kind of belatedly as ever woke up to the bleeding obvious, I thought, my God, they've played me like an absolute
I don't puppet, think it was bleeding you know? Obvious, actually. I think that the this was, as franchise, presumably this is going to be a franchise, I don't know if it's going to be a franchise, yeah. but this cannot be the end. I mean, it's made, I last checked, it's made $775 million
amazing.
Globally. It's the
amazing.
Biggest opening by a female director, Greta Gerwig, ever.
Yeah.
So it's a landmark film
and
already.
And it's very funny.
And it's very funny.
But the biggest kind of my God moments in it are when you see the old Barbies that actually existed.
Yes.
Like Sugar Daddy Barbie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like this sort of Barbie, Hugh Hefner style.
Yes. And
the Barbie with the boobs that,
yes,
that grow.
And the fact that they had a pregnant Barbie but decided it was too weird.
Too
and,
weird
and
to think, yeah.
It was full of layers. And so I suppose it's worth mentioning to the four people left in Britain who haven't seen it, that it's, you've got Barbie Land, in which Margot Robbie as Barbie and one of the Barbies, and Ryan Gosling, stereotypical Barbie, she's called, and brilliant Ryan Gosling as Ken. And there's something starts to happen to Barbie, stereotypical Barbie, Margot Robbie, and she goes to see Weird Barbie, played brilliantly by Kate McKinnon, who says, well, actually, you're looked after, your doll, your counterpart doll in the real world is obviously suffering. And this, it turns out, is an adult, America Ferrera, playing a character called Gloria, who has a daughter called Sasha, who, when Barbie and Ken inevitably go into the real world, Sasha called Barbie a fascist.
So you said the feminine cause, the feminist cause, about 50 years.
You fascist.
Barbie can't cope
at all. Yeah. Meanwhile, Ken goes back to Barbie Land, having discovered patriarchy in the real world.
Well, to explain, Ken is really, doesn't, Ken, in Barbie world, Ken has no existence Barbie is looking at him.
But an adjunct.
Yeah, none of the Kens
Barbie
do.
Land is a feminist paradise where, as they very sarcastically say at the top, you know, all problems for women have been resolved. And Ken is, his only function is to, you know, look great and dance with Barbie. And
he's an appendage.
And he's
Without an appendage.
And to lead a hopelessly unconsummated love for Barbie. But he goes to the real world and he discovers patriarchy in the world in which it's a man's world. And he thinks, I'll have some of this. And takes it back to Barbie Land, where, you know, Barbie is left in real world. And then by the time she gets back to Barbie Land, Ken has, you know, conducted a patriarchal revolution.
And there's that very funny moment where he's speaking to the, who is it? He's the chief exec of some company he's applying for a job for.
Oh, yes.
And he says, and Ken complains that he can't get a job because he hasn't got any qualifications. And he says, you're not doing the patriarchy enough. And the guy looks at him and says, yes, we are. We're just much more clever about it.
It's very good.
It's always worth a bit of a self-awareness check, I think, if you are a privileged white middle-aged male.
Yeah.
But there's a guy where they're pretending to be, you know, bimbos, you know, to try and distract the men from the takeover they're planning. And I thought it was so true. There was a guy, there was a Barbie sitting at a table saying, as a man walked past, saying, this Photoshop is just so complicated. And the guy walks over
leans
and says,
over.
You need to click there when you need to select one of the layers before. And it was just so, the mansplaining of
as
everything.
As you can imagine, the moment that I was totally busted, I just wanted to put my hands up in the cinema, was the Ken explaining to the Barbie about the Godfather. I thought,
You've never
seen and busted. Let me explain it to you. Great. Oh, that sounds fascinating. Yeah. The best thing about the Barbenheimer phenomenon is you've got two totally different, hugely intelligent movies that are just packing them in.
Yeah.
And I think, by the way, that Christopher Nolan, and I think he knows this, owes Greta Gerwig a big drink, because there's absolutely no doubt that more people went to see Oppenheimer on the back of this.
Isn't it great that especially for people of our age, cinema events. You know, we tried to book Barbie. I wanted to take my kids. We couldn't get four seats together.
It's really busy.
It was packed out the whole,
It's incredible. Well, as I confess in this week's The European, I've now seen Oppenheimer four times, which is really crazy. But
that is fairly hardcore.
It is.
Are you seeing somebody about this?
Professional help is being sought from a quantum physicist. But actually, and on every occasion,
Yeah.
I've kind of had a grab a seat here, and it's here and there. The films are still running not round the clock, but all day. They're having 10 a.m. showing. So this is a cultural phenomenon which we can really embrace and be happy about.
Let's do a very quick switcheroo on Oppenheimer then, because there was another controversy where David Baddiel took Christopher Nolan to task for not having a Jewish actor play Robert Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'm very pro Baddiel, and I'm very pro his first book, Jews Don't Count.
Yeah.
Because I think it really nailed an issue that, partly because of the Corbyn anti-Semitism controversy, had been dogging the political discourse, which was, what's going on here? And Baddiel's point is, Jews are not a religion primarily, they're an ethnic minority. And his point, I think, about Oppenheimer is, I don't know whether he's really saying it should have been entirely cut, because there are many Jewish nuclear physicists involved, not least Oppenheimer, who's played brilliantly by Cillian Murphy, who's an Irish guy.
Yeah.
I don't know whether David is saying every single Jewish nuclear physicist should have been played by a Jewish actor or actress. But I know what he calls Jew face. This became an issue when Helen Mirren was cast in a forthcoming movie about Golda Meir, which is, look, if this was any other ethnic minority, I mean, can you imagine if Daniel Day-Lewis was cast as Mandela? It wouldn't get past the...
What, if he blacked up?
Well,
as David Baddiel has done in the past.
Right, that's the point. And and to be fair to Baddiel, he has apologised in his documentary.
Well, let's hold that thought for a second, because he did apologise, but it took him 25 years.
No, sure. Do you not think
there's a slight element? And I'm a massive David Baddiel fan. I do question sometimes when he makes public statements about him being a public intellectual in the French mold. And I kind of think, mate, honestly, wind your neck in a little bit. And I do think you do forfeit a little bit the right to occupy the moral high ground when you've done stuff like that in the past, and you've talked about looking a bit like a pikey, or you've blacked up to humiliate a black footballer.
As many comedians have discovered to their cost, it's a difficult transition to make. Because if you've taken risks, as good comedians do, and made mistakes, as all comedians do, and he has, and he admits it.
But they were fairly egregious.
Yes, and you can, and I mean, in the Channel 4 documentary on Jews Don't Count, he kind of confronted this, and it was a tense moment. But where I think I'm with him is that until we start to see Jewish people as an ethnic minority fully, then this debate won't be over, because the truth is that most people don't. They see Jewish people as either white adjacent or, and this is, I think, one that really upsets a lot of Jewish people given the history of the 20th century, as so powerful that they're not entitled to the protections of powerless ethnic minorities.
Which, of course, is despicable.
Well, to look at the history of the Jewish people, it's not to look at the history of a power. But I think
taking it back to his specific complaint, should people, in your view, let's say Cillian Murphy was the best actor available in terms of being able to present Oppenheimer on the screen as an actor, would you take someone with lesser acting ability but with Jewish heritage?
Would that improve
the film?
No, but what I think he's asking for, and I would agree with him, and I don't see any evidence in Christopher Nolan's casting of that wonderful movie, is that there was any attention paid to the Jewishness of the actors. So Bernie Safdie, I think, plays Edward Teller, who was the father of the H-bomb. But that's about it.
Yeah.
Niels Bohr, who was of partly Jewish heritage, the greatest quantum physicist of all time, arguably, is played by Kenneth Branagh, who's definitely not Jewish.
Yeah.
And I think all that David Baddiel is really asking for is, guys, couldn't this at least be a factor?
Yes.
Not to your point that, Cillian Murphy puts in an absolute stunning, potentially Oscar-winning performance.
Yes.
Oppenheimer, he looks like him.
Yeah.
He sounds like him. He's brilliant. But I think that the point that it's very hard to make a movie that's about the development of an atom bomb to stop the Nazis, who at the time were, murdering the relatives of all these physicists.
Of course, yeah.
There has to be some sensitivity to Jewish ethnicity, and I suspect there wasn't any. And, I understand why he's raising it.
That's all right. Well, that's a, I mean, it's a fascinating.
It really is.
And it's a very multi-layered debate.
It is
and it's obviously uncomfortable. It makes me feel uncomfortable challenging it because I'm neither Jewish nor, you know.
I think that's, I think that's all he wants is for us to have uncomfortable conversations.
Well, that's good.
And uncomfortable conversations are good, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't enough of them.
I agree.
Words comfort zone should be, you know, excised.
Yeah.
They should be banned.
So, all right. So what haven't we had time to talk about?
The deal was won. Rishi Sunak. My weekly gripe, how to frame it. This week I'm mostly upset with Rishi Sunak because I cannot bear his geezer act.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing a sort of Clarkson. So first of all, we had the nonsense about I love motorists, I love cars. Yeah.
I'm fed up with motorists getting whacked over the head.
You know, and now
my government.
He did this Twitter thing, which was, you know, hands off the British boozer, right? And again, do you remember we had this last week with the Brexit has allowed us to make cannibal meat in the Greg Wallace documentary, which we loved so much. He says in this Twitter thread, or X thread, as we must now learn to call it, that I want to protect the price of your pint at the pub. And now the UK has left the EU, we could do just that. And one thing that I do like about what Elon Musk has done with X is that he's put in this community commentary thing where you can basically fact check.
Yeah.
And someone smart has just put in, you can do all these inside the EU. All the measures he's taking to help pubs.
This is the great lie.
Completely
great lie. The great lie is it went from being the EU are doing these things to ruin your life to now we couldn't have done this while we were in the EU. That's now the great lie. And 99.9% of it is pure bullshit.
You know, we'd still be in lockdown if we were in the EU, right? God we left.
That's right.
But I thought this was a particularly egregious example. And I'm getting increasingly irritated by Sunak's attempt to be normal.
Yeah.
You know, he did it again. He said, I'm off to Disneyland. I really like Disneyland. It's one of my kind of, you know, guilty pleasures. He's ruined that.
He's not. He's off to bloody California, though, in truth, isn't
he? Yes, he's off to stay in his fancy house.
While Greenpeace have covered his house in Yorkshire in black kind of tarpaulins.
You'd have to have a heart of stone not to laugh, wouldn't you? I mean, I know we're all meant to disapprove, so it's a terrible security breach, but it's also extremely funny.
I think fantastic.
I love it.
Absolute bloody hypocrite.
Yeah, and
the fact that he is, you know, willingly, because he's an intelligent guy.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that he is knowingly, willingly prejudicing the futures of our children.
Oh, it's amazing.
Just to win some bloody votes in the next election.
As you've said on this podcast before, how do you sleep at night? I mean, he was doing his green tour of Scotland, wherein he announced 100 new licenses for drilling oil and gas in the North Sea. And the pool interviewer said to him, isn't it a bit odd, Prime Minister, that you're off to do a green tour of Scotland in a private jet.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like having it up.
He's
him. And
so prickly,
he
isn't
he? Bristled and he said, in a wonderful non-secretary, he said, so you're against people going on holiday,
So if your answer is to ban holidays.
You want to ban
then
holidays.
I think you're totally wrong.
You want to take holidays away, which, as we know, if we were still in the EU, holidays would be banned,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And the poor guy was going, but that's not what...
He's a silly person. That's my final thought on the matter.
Well, listen, I couldn't agree more. To echo Danny Dyer's word, twat. He really is. And Matt Hill, the wonderful Matt Hill, the third Matt, our great producer, is shouting at us, we've got no more time.
Yeah. Yes, the referee is blowing the whistle.
Remember, folks, the latest edition of The New European is on newsstands now. It's actually our double issue summer special. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Bumper.
Although I would obviously lie and say this if it wasn't the case, but it is fantastic.
It is.
It's full of fantastic
top stuff.
Really great reading, £3.95 if you're not a subscriber. But if you're not a subscriber, why not? Subscribe. All you got to do is go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And I will personally give you a fantastic burgundy bollocks to Brexit passport cover. So you can display that with great pride in whatever customs queue or
what, you happen to be
border
stuck in.
Queue you happen to be stuck in.
Another Brexit benefit.
Yeah, another Brexit benefit. So thanks as always to Matt Hill, the third Matt at Rethink Audio, our brilliant producer. And until next week.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.